Recordings have started.
Great. Thanks, Marie. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the IGO Curative Rights Protection Mechanisms PDP Working Group call on the 15th of September at 1600 UTC. On the call today, we do have George Kirkos, Petter Rinforth, Jay Chapman, Philip Corwin, Paul Chattersfield. We do have apologies from Mason Cole and David Maher. From staff, we have Dennis Chang, Steve Chan, and myself, Michelle DeSpider. I would like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. With this, I will turn the call back over to Petter Rinforth.
Thank you. Petter here. And first, is there any new updates on statements of interest? See no hands up. So let's proceed directly to the topic of today, to continue our discussion of proposed recommendation. And I'm not, frankly, not sure which version we will, because I saw that there are differences from the Wiki and the Google version with where we had comments that were visually, and this is a clean document. Yes, I agree with George, and I synchronize it's best to have just one version. I with Steve, the one we see here on the screen, is that, because this is a clean version, I presume that we have the comments at the end of the document as such. So.
Hi, Petter. This is Steve Chan from staff. There's actually a different document I'm trying to bring up right now. This is indeed an older version.
Okay.
I'll bring up the latest extract from Google Docs, which also has the comments from Paul Keating, I believe, and maybe others. So just give me 1 second, please.
Yeah. Good. Now we have something that we can also see. And if we go so it, as the staff put in, there's several open questions on which the working group has yet to reach preliminary agreement, or for which the working group would like to see community input prior to finalizing this its recommendation on those topics. And I think we can, when we've finalized, can perhaps delete that and but there was a general reference to what's going on within GAC. That sentence could be good to put in there in initially, because otherwise, from other points of view, I think we will reach conclusions within the working group on most of the topics here. Okay. I hope you all can see the draft sections 6 on the screen, and we go to what our first comment. They are already allowed and permitted to use the UDRP URS. The issue is limited to their demand to retain immunity relative to post UDRP URS proceedings concerning the domain names issue. And that was on the initial general note that describing the charter for the working group. I see that that more as a general comment, as what we see here is what the text from our initial questions. So I don't see any reason to change that first sentence. Phil, your hand is up.
Yeah, Peter, just to clarify, we're on the first paragraph under the general title. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Paul's comment, while correct, misses the point. I think this sentence should read something like, to allow clearer access. What's really we've done is we've clarified and actually broadened their access. They have access now, you know, access is a question of standing. We've clarified that standing can be conferred not just by trademark registration, but by Article 6 tier registration. So both clarified and broadened the standing to use the existing mechanisms, but IGOs. I think the allowance of access is different from whether they have concerns about the access and sovereign immunity. I think we need to keep the two issues separate. So while Paul's comment is not incorrect, I think it kind of misses the point, which is that we've allowed a clearer and broader access through our recommendation to allow standing through the six-tier registration. That's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And if I understand you correctly, you still take it as common to us all and nothing that we need to change or add. Because I see it's more as a conclusion, and then if we change anything or add anything, it should be after the citation of the...
Yeah, well, really, I think the first sentence of the next paragraph is a little too curt, where it says, you know, our answers are no, but we are, while saying no, we're also clarifying the grounds for standing to utilize the mechanism. So we're not just doing nothing. We're providing a clarification that allows more certain access on broader grounds than is clear at the moment. And I think we should emphasize that.
Yeah. Good. I see George Kirkus on the chat. Is there perhaps anything you would like to state more vocally?
Sorry, I was muted. George Kirkus for the transcript. Yeah, I agree with Phil. Like, we don't necessarily have to change it if you want to, you know, wordsmith it a little bit. Conceivably, you could say improve access or remove obstacles to the use of those mechanisms. I think they're not necessarily changing anything from the recommendation point, so it's just an explanation of the recommendation.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so then we'll move on to the recommendation number one. And I see no comments on the recommendation as such, but on the description of it. So one comment is it's similar lex clarity. similar to what each other or other complainants. And what is either case being referenced? Delete thus. Well, that can I accept. And then it's more of a general, if practical, should we write UDRP/URS or UDRP and URS? I'm completely open for any of this, but in that case, we need to make changes in the old document so everything looks similar. But a suggested addition, while issues, I have to give it a little bit larger size here. While issues pertaining to immunity may persist, the working group realized that A, the setting of immunity is an election and not a judicial requirement. B, there is a certain unfairness in permitting a claimant to claim trademark rights and seek enforcement while simultaneously proceeding, precluding the domain registrant from seeking judicial recourse. And C, there appear to be alternatives available to the IDO/INGO to permit them to effectively assert the relevant trademark rights, such as utilizing a third-party commercial organization to assert trademark-related claims. And that, as I understand it, is suggestion to put in instead of just many INGOs already have and do enforce the trademark rights, and there is no perceivable barrier to other INGOs obtaining trademark rights in their names and or acronyms. So, first of all, with the initial, I see no reason to change or to further clarify the similarity in the first sentence here, as this is the word that is used in the procedures as such. So the question I have to you is, shall we add a more descriptive, as suggested here, the sentence that starts with many INGOs already have? I see no hands up on that. But I think also that we have some kind of further description in the document. So I suggest that you for the moment leave the document as it is on that. Then page 2, unlike IGOs who may claim jurisdictional immunity in certain circumstances, INGOs are not hindered from submitting to the jurisdiction of national courts under a mutual jurisdiction clause within the existing DRPs. I agree that INGOs may assert immunity, but it is optional. They may elect not to do so. But I think we have... isn't it so later on in the document that we, and also in this paragraph, we have examples on how IGOs can opt into not state their immunity. As we have in the professor's report, for instance, the regulations that United Nations have on this topic, and I presume that there are also other IGOs that have the same. And then we have the next, it should be a separate bullet point, and after first or second on the list, I suggest that we change the sentence to read, the existing system appears to be sufficient. The working group's research revealed that INGOs regularly use the UDRP to protect their rights, although the working group's thought comments directly from the INGO community, it revealed no evidence that any INGO had foregone existing the rights under the UDRP URS because of the immunity issue. And I can accept to put in that clarification because that describes, as I see it, also the situation that we concluded on a rather early stage. And then we have the Laurie agrees on George about the formatting. Yep. Then we also have comment 10. While some INGOs may be concerned about the costs of the UDRP URS process, the working group found that such issues were beyond the scope of the working group charter. Evidence showed that the majority of costs related to UDRP URS proceeding are professional fees as opposed to ADR processing fees. The working group saw no reason why INGOs could not request processing fee reductions directly from the ADR provider. No evidence was received to indicate that any INGO had requested such relief or that any request has been denied. Maybe it's I'm not sure that we should make such a conclusion. I think it's from my point of view, at least, it's better to just end that it's outside the scope of the working group charter, and then up to each dispute resolution providers. But everyone is free to make a comment on that. I see there is a lot of chat going on, but you're also free to raise your hand. Yes, George, please.
Sorry, George Grigos for the transcript. We might want to even point to the fact that ICANN has that $200 million or so from the new GTLD auction proceeds that they're looking for possible uses of it. So perhaps some of the IGOs or INGOs or other ones who feel that they need some form of subsidy for dispute resolution proceedings could propose that in that venue. So it would be outside of our scope, but we can at least point out the existence of that working group.
Yeah, thanks, George. I suggest that we can have that in mind when we discuss the topic, at least when we discuss it in a more unofficial way with IGO representatives and perhaps also with ICANN board. But still, I seen reason to get it into our comments officially. Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Phil, for the record, I have several comments here. Number one, this is stylistic. I mean, some of this is factual but it's about what facts we should use, and some of it is about style. I think stylistically, on each of these recommendations, we have the boldface recommendation, and then we have an explanation of why we reached that, why we are making that recommendation, and that explanation should be as narrow as possible. It should be
targeted explaining the particular recommendation. And I'm concerned that while some of Paul's suggestions are correct, he's mixing in other issues that are addressed in other ways, and it kind of muddles the clarity of what we're trying to do here, which was to explain, you know, the reason we're reaching the conclusion. So, for example, in comment 9, where he says, when he starts adding in NGOs and I don't know what an NGO is, you know, the immunity issue, that's really confusing because they don't have any immunity. They're non-governmental entities. So that, I think, muddies it. And then I think we should confine our discussion to things we actually discussed and have a record on. I don't recall, maybe I missed it, but I don't recall ever discussing whether any UDRP or U.S. provider ever provided reduced fees or no fee filings to any party, and under what circumstances that occurred. So if we didn't get into it, I don't think we should start, you know, throwing in references to where it says no evidence was received. I don't recall us looking for any evidence on fee relief. And frankly, any discussion of fee relief doesn't belong in this section, which is explaining why we didn't think we needed to address, you know, non-governmental organizations. That belongs in a completely separate section if we're going to have it regarding, I would favor in the overall report, not in the recommendation, some discussion of the GAC input we received, the GAC communique recommendations relating to our work. I think we should address them in a final report, just as we should address some comments I believe would be proper regarding our relationship to the board negotiations with the GAC and the IGO small group. But I don't think they should be mixed into these parts, which should be as narrow as possible explanations of the recommendations we reach. So some of that style, but I really think we want to not have cross-references to every other topic in these explanations. We want to keep them focused on explaining the particular recommendation. So thank you for letting me air those thoughts.
Thanks. So let's move on to recommendation 2. And again, the comments are more under the explanation. I know the comments, comment number 16, the change, the under both the UDRP and the URS complainant must, as a threshold, establish that it holds the rights in a trademark or service mark. I suggest that we keep the text as it is, because I see it more, as the general legal text. Fill your hands up. Okay. And then it's a comment also on the general accepted that ownership by a complainant of a trademark is sufficient to satisfy the threshold requirement of having trademark rights. This, so there's a change reading that threshold may be satisfied by establishing either ownership or exclusive license rights in the trademark or service trademark. In the UDRP context, trademark rights do not require registration and may be established by evidence and use referred to. Et cetera, you can read it here. That I can agree to because it describes more specified the differences between the UDRP and the URS when it comes to what you initially have to show. And as I said, the URS is more restricted there on the first first issue. Okay. Then there is also on next page a proposed addition on the reference to the Paris Convention. Well, I think it's could be legally correct to have it there. And then, as discussed further below in, and there should be an input on the page where it is, the working group believes that when it comes to limitation on the reflex on the subsected grounds on the European U.S., which require that respondent have no legitimate rights or interest in the domain that is identical or confusingly similar to complainant's mark, and has registered and used the domain in bad faith. And I see comments on Article 6 here that it does not provide for any trademark rights itself, which is perfectly correct. It's merely imposed the burden of signature states to prohibit registrations of trademarks or use in trademarks that are identical, but only if it suggests a connection at the public level. I think, maybe if we should have any more description of Article 6 tier, that should more be on the next article that starts with a consequently. And I see George saying that instead of burden of signatory states, perhaps obligation of signatory states. I think that's, yes, George, we take that as a note. Good suggestion. So, and then we have on the next page at the top to enshrine this recommendation as part of binding consensus policy and our contractual agreement with ICANN's contracted parties. The working group recommends that a binding policy guidance document be prepared that will describe the scope of the standing issue for IDOs as well as any other points that may warrant clarification. So the GNSA Council and the ICANN board accept these PDP recommendations. And Phil, I turn it over to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to suggest that somewhere in the one or the two in either of the two paragraphs at the top of this page, where it's talking about Article 6 tier and armorial bearings, flags, and other state emblems, and then to I guess at the end it says abbreviations and names of international intergovernmental organizations. I just saw that. So, but maybe we should emphasize that because. Just that's the part that's relevant to what we're looking at. It's the names and abbreviations of the IGOs. Maybe put that in bold and emphasize that, or add a sentence at the end of that first paragraph, acknowledging that's the extension of its scope in 1958 is what it makes relevant. What makes it relevant to our work? So, just what's there is okay. I'm just. Suggesting some emphasis or additional explanation to tie it better to our. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And I take it, as you see on page 4, we then have a specific article that describes Article 6 tier. So I suggest that everything we note that is not perfectly clear about Article 6 tier in the document, maybe it should be better to refer to this part of the document so that the description legal issues and everything is on one at the same place. And then I go to recommendation 3. Let's see what comedy could be. Usually argued that parasy in fact operates as a condition for the recognition of the right, and that this condition presents a higher burden for the complainant because it's not merely a text versus text comparison, but necessarily includes establishing an element of confusion at the level of the public. There's also some other note here. See what we have to change in this recommendation. As such, so I proceed to number 4, which is in relation to the issue of jurisdictional immunity. The working group recommends that no change be made to mutual jurisdiction clause of the UDRP and URS, and IDOs be notified that they have the ability to elect to have a complaint filed under the UDRP and or URS. On behalf of an SNE agent or licensee, such that claims of jurisdictional immunity made by an IDO in respect of particular jurisdiction will fall to be determined by the applicable laws of jurisdiction. And then option 1, the decision rendered against the registrant in the processor, UDRP, URS question shall be vitiated, or option 2, the decision rendered against the registrant in the predecessor, UDRP, may be brought before and the name of arbitration entity for the de novo review and judgment. So here we have two specific options. And I presume that to be clear in our report, we should decide on one of these options, one or two. Or shall we have it as two variations that people outside our group can make comments on? Neither is also an option. I think that what we have discussed before may be, option 1 is the what we have concluded in our working group. Option 2, I said when we discussed this with IDO representatives, especially with WIPO before, they stated just after our meeting in Helsinki that they could accept with option 2. But we need to make a conclusion within our working group. So, what do you think is the best? George says in the chat, although we seem to believe that in most jurisdictions, an IDO would have been deemed to have waived immunity and the court would recognize that. And I take that more as you prefer option 1. says that between option one and two, option one is preferable. And George, please go ahead.
George Kourikos. Yeah, I think as Jay said, you could start the paragraph where it says where an IGO succeeds. Like, conceivably, we could remove that paragraph, sorry, that sentence entirely, where it has the two options, because right now we don't, the EDRP doesn't say anything about what happens if an IGO files a EDRP and succeeds in asserting its immunity in a court. So in some sense, we would be modifying the EDRP slightly if we implement either option number one or option number two. And so it would be kind of like taking into account a scenario that might not have been contemplated at the time the EDRP was created. Personally, I'd be in favor of option number one because it would kind of close loopholes and ensure that the existence of the EDRP doesn't create a problem that didn't exist without it having been implemented in the first place. In other words, if EDRP didn't exist, a complainant as IGO, an IGO as a complainant would have had to have waived its immunity by bringing a suit in a court. And so they shouldn't be able to avoid that waiver of immunity simply by filing a UDRP first to create the conflict. So that would be my reasoning for going with option number one. It kind of eliminates that kind of a loophole.
Yeah, I also see Laurie Schulman says that option one doesn't seem to be an option. It forces the IGO to waive its immunity. If we can't say that starting a UDRP or URS procedure is in fact a signal that they have waived their immunity. I'll leave it over to you, Phil.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. And Phil here. I'm going to have my own general rule against kicking cans down the road and suggest we lay out it with much greater detail the pluses and minuses of each option and invite comment in the comment period. We need to explain that this situation, first of all, appeals are going to be rare. If a IGO brings in a UDRP or URS and it fails, the complainant does not prevail, the only way this is going to arise is if they exercise an option to take it to a court of mutual jurisdiction, in which case they're waiving the immunity, unless we're going to give them an option in that case to take it to another arbitrator. For the registrant, if the registrant there's a negative finding by the panel against the registrant, that would result in extinguishment or transfer of their domain. I think we need to discuss the possibility that option one might incentivize some infringing registrants to seek review despite the cost of doing so, knowing that a particular IGO tends to assert its immunity and is hoping that they will do so to vitiate the case. So on the other hand, we don't want to leave the registrant without any relief because there's a negative decision against them. And if the IGO successfully asserts immunity, they'd have no appeal right. So then, you know, you have two not great choices. One, allow an infringing registrant who's forced the decision into court hoping to have the IGO assert immunity and therefore vitiate the UDRP decision, or without an arbitration system, if there's successful assertion of immunity, there is no way for the registrant to get review. So I think we have to learn that these are all imperfect options. They're all going to be extremely rare cases in our estimation, but I would prefer laying out the pluses and minuses of each and not making a final decision until we get community feedback on this.
Thanks. Before I leave it over to Laurie, hearing you and reading the chat, I I think it would be perhaps good to rephrase the recommendation for, and I am not the perfect language of that right now, but to even in the recommendation for more stating that there are two possible options, and that we recommend option one, and then as you said in the further text, make that plus and minus to explain why we have come to this conclusion on option one. And I think it's also it's important to make in our further description and on our recommendation four that it's not there's no perfect solution, but based on all the plus and ones, we recommend option one. But also that each one have had a possibility to look at option two and come in with comments on that. Laurie, please.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to support the suggestion about, I think we should emphasize that more thought than what appears on its page is given to it in terms of the pros and cons, the rarity of these actions in the community.
Sorry, Laurie. Is there any possibility that it can get out of the noise behind you?
I don't know what noise you're hearing. I'm in a quiet room. Nothing's running. So I don't know what noise you're picking up. Do you want me to type, or I could try to go to another room? There's nothing where I'm sitting that seems to be projecting noise. What are you hearing?
Yeah, if it's possible for you to change the room, that's you're perfectly welcome
yeah.
back. Sorry, I couldn't.
Can you still hear me?
You there?
Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. But please, try again. I don't hear Laurie at all. Thank you, George, because everything was so silent. Laurie, I suggest that you call again. In the meantime, I read Phil's comment on chat room. We should also emphasize in extended explanation that part B of recommendation for allowing action to be brought by SNE, agent, or licensee should eliminate most assertions of sovereign immunity at appeal stage, providing that the court recognizes validity of the original procedure transfer of rights. Yes. And Laurie asks someone to the staff to call out. And George says, right, Phil, IGO's concern about immunity have roots around it using SNE agent and licensee. That's a pill stage in my comment. Yep. So we should definitely put that explanation and clarification under recommendation four on our notes there. Laurie's hand is up, but she's typing. Yeah, she agreed with Phil that we should put more explanation in about the group's thinking and the pros and cons. And I think we all agreed about it. It needs to be put in a very clear way. Although I still think that it's best way for our clarification to have, even if we have two possible versions of it, for a working group to come to a common conclusion that we should recommend one of them, and then it's up to each party outside our working group to come into with comments and votes for version one or two. Laurie, is you terrible online now? She'll call out. Okay, I'll proceed to recommendation number five. And there's an insert text here about how this may be beyond the scope of the working group's authority. In respect of the reminder of the GAC's advice concerning access to security rights processes for IDOs, the working group recommends that I can investigate the feasibility of providing IDOs and INDOs with access to the UDRP and URS with accompanying policy guidance as recommended in this report at no or nominal cost in accordance with the GAC advice on the subject. So here come the cost aspects. And we have already talked about why it's not up to us to make comments on the costs and which service provider I can should assist in lowering the costs. So, as stated by the staff here, we should insert the text that describe why this is beyond our working group's authority. But I don't think we need to add so many lines on that. But it should be something there. And then recommendation number six, to the extent that the GNSO receives a concrete proposal from the board GAC IDO small group, the one that we have not heard so much from prior to the issuance of this working group's final report, the working group requests that the GNSO council refers to the working group those aspects of the proposal that affect any creative rights protections for IDOs so that the working group may review and propose recommendations with a view toward discussing them in this final report. And here, insert text here about the known status of the IDO small group discussions. I think that's the ones that maybe can do that the best way is the staff that have the recent updates on it. And now I think we have Laurie.
Yes, you do.
Welcome back. Yes.
Thank you. Sorry about, I don't know what you were hearing. I was in a room with no machinery, so I'm not sure what you were hearing unless it was just buzz.
Yeah, we heard everything except for you, but no.
Okay.
Oh, everything is clear.
Okay, so I think my headset is probably dead. Okay, I was just making some general observations. I think that Phil's idea about expanding on how we think about this is very important because, based on the conversation that we had last week and that we could go around again this week in terms of option one or two, I am definitely in the camp that neither is a good option for a variety of reasons. And while I do respect the points of view, particularly of George and Paul, when you certainly don't want a registrant held hostage to an IDO without recourse, I understand that. And I also, alternatively also understand, and perhaps it's because I do have an American-centric point of view on some things, and I fully admit that this issue of sovereign immunity within the U.S. court system, and in a lot of circumstances, we live with it, you know? And so that could just be part of my own built-in mechanisms for how I handle disputes in my career. That's just as an explanation to the group since we've gotten to know each other the last couple of years. But these are terrible options, I think, in some respects. And if we're going to go down these options, then I think, yes, we need a more fulsome explanation of why we're here, rather than just have these stark recommendations without a lot of supported thinking.
Okay, so if I read you correctly, you are more going back to that we, in even if it's called a recommendation, we describe just briefly in the recommendation such the two possible ways to solve it, and then we insert more text with our plus and minus. But in this first draft, in this first recommendation, we don't recommend any specific ones of them, and we leave it to the public to come in with comments on either A or B is the best solution, so to speak.
Right, or we explain that there's rough consensus here, not full consensus. In the interest of transparency, that I don't know if that helps or hurts the cause, but it's
talking just from an administrative point of view, I've been in working groups with where we had not full consensus on everything, and it's always the best if we can when we come out with recommendations to have full consensus as much as possible. But also, this is not our final recommendation. I presume that we come in with comments from the public, and then we come up with our final recommendations. I think it's not so bad if we in one of the recommendations have two possible options, and then we can describe more the plus and minus. And of course, there will be more plus than minus for option one. Heck, but rather than to at this stage indicate that we don't have a consensus because we haven't made our final decision on it.
Right, I understand that. I want to address George because he said that he'd like to ask me if I think the licensee assignee methods aren't viable. I actually think they are viable. But that is where I'd like to hear from the IGOs, because that may be a very good road to go down. I mean, American companies, the companies do it all the time. They put their IP into holding companies, and it's the holding companies that instigate the actions, and they do it for tax reasons, they do it for liability reasons. And I don't see why on an IGO level the same type of strategy couldn't be employed to enforce domain, issues around domain names in the UDRP. But that is something that I think legally it seems to make sense and could be exactly the type of workaround we suggest, but I certainly would want the input of the IGOs on that.
Thanks.
Yes.
Before I leave it
point,
over to... Yep.
Yeah. To George's point, if we could get the IGOs on that bandwagon, I would have a higher comfort level, yes.
It seems that in the time between our next meeting next week, we should have the possibility to discuss online the recommendation 4 to see if we can come to some kind of conclusion by the next meeting. Phil.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. And I'll be brief because I know we've got 2 minutes left here. Quickly on 5 and 6, recommendations 5 and 6. On 5, I believe in this section we need a full recitation of all the GAC portions of the GAC communities that have been issued on the subject of IGO protections, particularly the ones since we began our work. So, one, they're there in the record, and two, we can
respond to them, and that would be the place to discuss the where it says, in respect to the remainder of the GAC's advice, we really haven't set forth what the GAC's advice has been. I think this is the place to do it, and to on the lower no cost, to explain why that's a matter of someone, either the dispute DRP providers voluntarily providing discounts or services, or someone subsidizing, and that's not, we have no authority to do that. But I think we need to lay out all the GAC advice and discuss it. We may want to say some more once it's in here in print. I want a very comprehensive report, because I expect, frankly, some criticism from the same folks in the IG community who have been pretty much not engaged in our work, because it's not going to come out with the recommendation they want. So I think we need a very full and fully discussed record on all of these points. On number six, let's discuss this more next week, but I think, you know, I have real concerns about what the board's been doing. The board's in a situation where they got conflicting recommendations from the GNSO Council, which is the group charged with making GTLD policy, and this is what all of this relates to, and they got GAC advice, which is supposed to be the lesser, have lesser weight than GNSO Council adopted recommendations, and since and the recommendations and the advice were contrary, and since receiving the contrary input, the board's been meeting in closed-door sessions with the advisory group and has had no discussions with the council or any subset of the council on their recommendations. They've been extremely tardy in communicating what's going on with that group or conveying final thoughts. So I want more discussion next week where it says we're going to review the proposed recommendations. We really, after we put out draft report and recommendations, are we really going to consider rewriting everything and beginning extensive new discussions to deal with whatever finally comes from that board GAC IGO negotiating group? I'm not sure that's proper. But I'm not sure what how to handle it. But I think we need a lot more discussion on recommendation number six next week.
And what you're saying, Phil, is that you don't look forward to another 2 years with our working group?
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, that board small group negotiating group has been, they're well aware of our presence, and where we are in our process. They've been extremely slow and extremely opaque in what they're up to. And this current language seems to say that we're going to put out draft report and recommendations before Hyderabad. That's our aim. And then suddenly they, you know, throw something over the transom during the public comment period. Are we really supposed to... it seems to me the only way to properly deal with that would be to withdraw the initial draft report and recommendations and spend many more weeks discussing what they've sent us and then put out a revised version. Are we committing to that? That's what I want to discuss next week in terms of how this recommendation number six is drafted as it is currently drafted. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And then it turns us automatically over to point three, next steps, next meeting. And let me see, next, as I see it, next week our main issues will be recommendation four and six, but also recommendation five, to make further comments on that. And we have a long list of notes from the staff. Thanks. So we are, Mike, what we are 2 minutes past. Anything the staff would like to note or add? No.
It's just from staff notes. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. So thanks for a very fruitful discussion and meeting today, and see you again next week. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Everyone, enjoy the remainder of your day. Take care.